in his Schreiben und Denken. And here you see a bad photograph of the cover of that page, of that book. In his Schreiben und Denken from the year 2000, the Austrian linguist Hans-Peter Ortner identifies 10 main writing strategies, Schreibstrategien. The first one is... The first one is writing in one go. The second is writing of one idea into one text version. The third is writing of one idea into several text versions. The fourth is writing through several text versions of one idea into several new ideas. The fifth is initial planning and subsequent writing out of the plan. The sixth is writing down of text externally elaborated results. The seventh, linear step-by-step writing. The eighth, syncretistic writing. The ninth, writing of parts. And number 10, puzzle writing, Putzle-Schreiben. I have these writing strategies listed on the handout. In this paper, I will first investigate to what extent Wittgenstein's writing can be said to exemplify the use of all these writing strategies. Ortner classifies Wittgenstein as a specimen of a puzzle writer, strategy 10. In contrast to this, I will second argue that Ortner's classification is, in an interesting and important sense, contestable. Against Ortner, I have held in a paper which I refer to in the abstract, and if you come across that paper, it's not the same as this paper. It is related to this one, but the two are complementary. So in that paper, I have argued for the position that Wittgenstein, as the author of the Philosophical Investigations, part one, that Ortner is best classified as a syncretistic writer, while Ortner classifies him as a puzzle writer. Nonetheless, I believe that Ortner's classification of Wittgenstein as a puzzle writer, rather than as a syncretistic writer, tells us something very significant about the view that most of us, including Ortner, have of the functions of academic and scholarly writing on the one hand, and those of philosophy on the other. But I also believe that it is exactly this view that is actually challenged and opposed by Wittgenstein in his PI, Philosophical Investigations. Thirdly, I want to discuss the role of examples in Wittgenstein's Philosophical Investigations and will try to relate his use of examples to the writing strategy which I think is most characteristic for the PI, that is the syncretistic writing. My overall point is to show that Wittgenstein mastered all of Ortner's writing strategies, including the very academic ones, but that he, for his Philosophical Investigations, settled on a writing strategy and a form, the syncretistic, which is opposed to the most academic of all of these strategies, namely the strategy and form of linear discursive writing. Syncretistic writing goes well together with writing in examples, and Wittgenstein's, quote, method by examples demands the syncretistic. But this is, or so I will argue in the fourth and concluding section, not in tune with the spirit of our civilization, especially not as it is alive in philosophy. So, first section, Wittgenstein's writing strategies. I will begin by going through Ortner's complete list of writing strategies and use them as objects of comparison, Vergleichsobjekte, for looking at Wittgenstein's writing work. We will see that Wittgenstein cannot be said to make use of one strategy only, but that he is a writer who, probably as any writer, utilizes different strategies in different contexts and for different purposes. That said, and against this background, I consider it significant that for the Philosophical Investigation, he chose the syncretistic strategy and form. Strategy 1, writing in one go. The first writing strategy Ortner discusses is writing in one go, Schreiben in einem Zug. It is writing which is non-disjointed and non-disjoining and carried through in one phase and one layer. disposition and planning, interruption, stocktaking, pausing, revision, parallel processing are all alien to this strategy, and the writer tries to avoid them. What is sought and practiced is the free flow of idea and pen as much as possible. There seems to be little of this strategy one writing in Wittgenstein's philosophical Nachlass. By and large, Wittgenstein's Bemerkungen, his short remarks, separated from each other by blank lines, are already subjected in the first writing stage to insertion, deletion, overwriting, rearrangement, multiversioning, and other acts unknown or unwanted by strategy one. When writing, Wittgenstein typically pauses, jumps, is recursive, puts a focus on a detail here and does a first drafting there, coming back to this later. Adopting thus strategies that make his writing disjointed rather than flowing, with the writer reflecting on either process or product. Nevertheless, some of his texts seem indeed to have been written with strategy one, without sofortrevision, immediate revision, as complete first expressions of an idea or thought with a beginning and an end, and only in the second and later stages, and some of them not even then, they become the subject of revision and correction. I'm talking about Wittgenstein's writing of remarks of a personal nature or dealing with matters of culture, religion, history, or art. Thus, in short, the sort of aphoristic remarks of which a selection was published by Georg Henrik von Richt in Vermischte Bemerkungen. These texts usually exist only in one version. They can be seen to exemplify Ortner's strategy one. At the same time, they can also be seen to exemplify strategy two, which is the writing of only one version of a text. Now we go to strategies two, three, and four. From one idea to one text, that is strategy two. More text, strategy three, or from one idea to several texts, and from there again to further ideas, which is strategy four. With strategy two, we embark on writing forms where the vision of either process or product enters the field as a parameter. Such division characterizes, according to Ortner, all of the strategies he discusses, except strategy one. With strategy two, the division is still of a moderate kind, but there we already find ourselves in the terrain of at least potentially multiple relations between idea and text. The potential gap between the idea and the text version, becomes an issue. Strategy two writing consists in a conscious procession from one idea to one written text, einen Text zu einer Idee schreiben. Most of Wittgenstein's texts can be characterized as in compliance with strategy three and even more strategy four, writing which proceeds from one idea to several text versions, or writing which develops several new ideas from the process of writing down one idea into several text versions. Strategy four is employed by a writer who values and capitalizes the process of correction and revision for the further development of thoughts, the writer who develops new knowledge through the activity of revision, Ortner calls this writer, or subsumes him under the type of this text aus den Korrekturenentwicklers. Wittgenstein definitely used to revise and write new and alternative versions of his remarks a lot. To develop one tiny and seemingly innocent idea through revising and versioning it into a number of texts and thereby to a number of new and competing ideas. Although Wittgenstein, as a strong user of strategies 3 and 4, and especially strategy 4, works heuristically through texts and through different text versions to the, if ever, satisfying final version of a text, this is still not and cannot be done without any pre-existing and pre-configuring idea, without at least some planning. Wittgenstein exemplifies thus also strategy five. which is Planen des Schreiben, making plans and writing them out. From the preface to the Philosophical Investigations, we know that at different times Wittgenstein had made different plans for the work which became the Philosophical Investigations. From this preface, we also know that he struggled with following and carrying out these plans and felt incomparably better when he could go back to his micro units, the single remarks, each with its own special radiations, and when he could recover his driving force there. He felt that his thoughts were soon crippled if I tried to force them on in any single direction against their natural inclination, quote from the PI preface. Nevertheless, planning had to have, at least occasionally, a crucial and positive function also for Wittgenstein. One example stems from the genesis of the big TypeScript, DS213. Around 1932, Wittgenstein cuts copies of TypeScripts produced since 1930 into cuttings consisting of single remarks or groups of such remarks and puts them into a new arrangement. In TypeScript 212, he orders them in bundles, sticks them together, and interpolates additional sheets with handwritten headings and subheadings. Where each single cutting was to go was recorded on the cuttings with letters and numbers. I refer to the work by Joseph on this matter. In TypeScript 213, this plan was carried out by dictation, producing a TypeScript of more than 750 pages. There are also earlier examples. Wittgenstein followed the plan when he, about 15 years earlier, from the remarks originally written in the First World War diaries, composed the so-called Prototractatus, which then eventually became the Tractatus. And there are later examples, when in late autumn 1936, he started on the new Philosophical Investigations, the Urfassung, as Joachim calls it. He planned the sequence and selection of remarks, at least to some considerable extent, first with lists. And I have got some facsimiles here. We could look at examples of all of those strategies. We can, summarizing, say that planning was utilized by Wittgenstein at those moments when he was heading for a work, maybe even a publication, in contrast to those phases when he was just working on remarks which at some point might become a publication or part of a publication, a work. Strategy 6, text external elaboration plus subsequent writing down what you have elaborated text externally. Hans-Peter Ortner refers to studies of Hermann Hesse, which present Hesse as someone who writes only down what he had prepared outside any paperwork. I quote from Ortner, merkwürdig ist, von Hesse sind Vorentwürfe oder Skizzen nicht überliefert. Sein Werk entsteht nach längerer Vorbereitung in einer Niederschrift, die wenige Sofortkorrekturen enthält. If these studies are right, then the Strategy 6 writer is a writer who does not need the paper in order to develop his narratives and reflections. And writing for him is not much more than just Niederschreiben. Such writing, if to be successful, presupposes that the stuff to be written about is already under control, its form envisioned, and once approached to it, settled in detail before the writing act. Even if such writing may seem somewhat far removed from Wittgenstein's case, we cannot say that nothing went on outside and before he put pen to paper. In Wittgenstein, text external elaboration of text and content could be solitary thinking, conversation with oneself on a walk, dialogue with someone else, or the act of reflected and critical reading. And here I refer to Hans Biesenbach's collection of those places where Wittgenstein, in his writings, explicitly or implicitly discusses points made by Frege, philosophers, artists, writers, and where Hans Biesenbach both identifies the the place in Wittgenstein's work where such references or Anspielungen are to be found and the actual targets of them. During the First World War at the front, it was only at moments that Wittgenstein had the time to devote himself to continuous writing, although a thought and an argument could strike him everywhere, also when on service as a soldier and without paper. In the early days of his return to philosophy in Cambridge in 1929, he used to go for long discussion walks with Ramsey, and only later would the results from such short thinking make it onto paper. Later, Wittgenstein would have sustained conversations with Francis Skinner and others before writing. Strategy 7, everything in its own time. Strategy 7 is linear, step-by-step writing. For Wittgenstein, this strategy was in a special variant and in a special period crucially important. Moreover, in that specific variant and period, it was not only a strategy of writing, but at the same time a strategy for organizing the written and also the reading. In the Brown Book Complex, Wittgenstein uses strategy 7 to perfect both production division and product division. First A, then B, then C. By the Brown Book Complex, I mean what by the Fourier numbering system is called MS-141, the Brown Book TypeScript 310, and the second part of manuscript 115, the German revision of the English Brown Book, or just German translation. The structure of these items is a more or less linear sequence of simple language games, language usages, beginning with the Builder's Game, which are used to eliminate part by part and step by step, that's strategy 7, one field of language after the other. The language games are used as objects to which we can compare our everyday language, and general reflections are interpolated between them. Strategies 8 to 10, syncretistic writing, which is 8, parts only writing and partial writing. Although writing strategies 2 to 7 involve production or process division, they do, according to Ortner, not involve much product division. The product remains intact. They manage not only to envision but also to produce a relatively coherent and intact whole. This becomes different with strategies 8 to 10. In contrast to strategy 7, strategy 8, syncretistic writing, is both on macro and micro levels characterized by a great number of simultaneous building places, Baustellen, with hardly anything completed, but some begun here and some other already being achieved over there, and with a second floor already in the making while its foundations are still hardly sketched out. Strategy 9, parts writing, is moderately product dividing, but already a writing of parts rather than of a whole. However, although the whole is not there, there are still enough parts produced to see and let the whole be seen. The whole is visible in the parts, even though not all parts are present. Strategy 9 lacks two crucial components of strategy 7, a reasonable amount of completeness and linearity. Any writing which aims at completeness seems to need, at least according to Ortner, making heavy use of linear procedure. Strategy 10 is then really a writing of parts only, and doing it in such a way that the whole is no longer in sight. Division reaches a level which also dissolves the wholeness of the product, not only the process. With strategy 10, the whole is, however, still presupposed, but division of it disappears, and we are left with an extreme kind of product division, which Ortner calls Putzleschreiben, puzzle writing. Ortner considers Wittgenstein a puzzle writer par excellence, and describes him in an entire subchapter almost exclusively as such a puzzle writer. Even if Wittgenstein may have aimed at an integrated and whole text, he was not able to achieve his objective, and according to Ortner, no whole is derivable from the parts which Wittgenstein was able to actually to deliver. In this section, I've tried to show that although Ortner himself describes and classifies Wittgenstein almost exclusively as a specimen of the puzzle writer, his overall description and analysis of writing strategies leaves at the same time room for seeing Wittgenstein as exemplifying also the other strategies. In the next section, I will discuss Ortner's assessment of Wittgenstein as a puzzle writer in some more detail. Before I propose Ortner's strategy 8, syncretistic writing, not strategy 10, as the best model for describing Wittgenstein's writing, or at least his writing of the philosophical investigations. So now, is Wittgenstein a puzzle writer? According to Ortner, Wittgenstein's situation can be understood as follows. His field of research was like a huge jigsaw puzzle, and he has been successful in finding and properly arranging some of the pieces of that puzzle. But when writing the philosophical investigations, he still lacks many of them, and for some of the ones which he has found, he does not yet know their place. Parts of the puzzle are in place, but they are too few to show what the overall picture will look like. In the end, Wittgenstein's puzzle got never completed. The PI got never completed. Ortner's main explanation for Wittgenstein having to become and to remain a puzzle writer is that Wittgenstein had himself set the task of representing such a large landscape of knowledge that it became impossible for him to achieve the overview, maybe impossible for anyone to achieve. This we can consider the part of Ortner's explanation which invokes a fundamentum in re. But Ortner invokes also a personal shortcoming argument. Wittgenstein was not able or did not want to do better because of his writing nature, Schreibnaturell. Ortner sees substantial support for his interpretation in Wittgenstein's autobiographical complaints about the difficulty to bring his ideas into a clear, linear, and coherent form. Looking at Wittgenstein as a puzzle writer helps us, so Ortner, to understand why Wittgenstein did certain things, and furthermore, why he did certain things in an excessive manner indeed. As a puzzle writer, Wittgenstein had to continuously see where and how a certain single remark fitted in. He was busy with finding out which parts of the field could be put together from the pieces already available. Hence the continuous versioning and arranging and rearranging. So there's no problem, one can combine one writing strategy with other writing strategies. Ortner's diagnosis and description of Wittgenstein as a puzzle writer seems convincing. It appears to be supported by the fact that the Nachlass contains a substantial collection of leftover cuttings. Think, for example, of what is called TS-233, Die Zettel. And that Wittgenstein's writing and composition work always produced such leftovers. With the puzzle picture, Ortner seems capable of offering an explanation for many lacunae in Wittgenstein's writings and thought, not only in the philosophical investigations. With this picture, Ortner also manages to address and utilize one of Wittgenstein's key notions, Übersichtlichkeit, übersichtliche Darstellung, overview, perspicuous representation. The task is to achieve Übersicht, an overview of at least a part of our language. Moreover, the picture also seems supported by Wittgenstein's biographical self-descriptions. But is Ortner's classification and description of Wittgenstein as a puzzle writer really correct? As much as it seems convincing, it seems to me still wrong. The main point is not that Ortner's description under-acknowledges the fact that Wittgenstein, as I've tried to show, in fact practices a great many of writing strategies. It is Ortner's diagnosis of Wittgenstein as a paradigmatic puzzle writer which seems wrong to me. Ortner says that Wittgenstein was, to a significant degree, because of personal failure, not capable of doing better than producing only disconnected pieces of a puzzle. But this simply does not seem true. Maybe the situation is not that Wittgenstein was not capable of producing a completed puzzle, but that he thought there was, in philosophy, no such completeness to be produced, or, at a certain point, no longer thought that there was. Maybe he thought it would be misleading to behave as though there was. If this is so, then it may also be that Wittgenstein's insight that there is no such puzzle whole to be produced has left a fundamental mark on the making of his philosophical investigations, and that they were formed by this insight. Hereby, I have addressed the issue which to me seems to lie at the heart of the disagreement between Ortner's categorization of Wittgenstein and mine. When arriving at the view that Wittgenstein is a puzzle writer, I think Ortner is actually putting up a standard for Wittgenstein's writing which is in conflict with Wittgenstein's own understanding of what he is doing. Ortner is not just empirically describing Wittgenstein's actual writing behavior. When using the writing is writing of a complete whole standard as measuring stock, one cannot see Wittgenstein other than as one who fails. An alternative, however, would have been to question the standard as such. The fact that Ortner classifies Wittgenstein as a puzzle writer is due to the specific normative writing model which he presupposes. Ortner, in his description of Wittgenstein, is biased by exactly the view of writing which is dominant in academic scholarship. Good writing is, through linear and step-by-step procedure, producing a coherent and consistent whole. But this is not all. Ortner brings as baggage into his discussion of Wittgenstein not only a standard for what writing is, but also a related specific standard for what philosophy is to be. And he tacitly ascribes to Wittgenstein the acceptance of this standard. Consequently, where Wittgenstein does not match this standard, Ortner notes it as a failure of Wittgenstein, rather than as a matter of possibly different standards. In that other article I have referred to, I have argued that the conception of philosophy which Ortner tacitly presupposes, though it is, of course, standard in academic philosophy, and in particular in analytic philosophy, is not shared by Wittgenstein, and particularly not by his philosophical investigations. Quite the contrary is true. It is one of the philosophical investigations' primary tasks to oppose this very conception, and to defend and promote an alternative to it. This is, as Wittgenstein sees and says it in the PI preface, grounded in the subject nature, it is in the nature of philosophical problems which compels us to travel over a wide field of thought crisscross in every direction, quote from the preface. It is not that it is impossible for him to complete the puzzle because the area to be represented is too big for him and because he additionally has some personal shortcomings, but because there is no pre-given puzzle he sees there to be put together in philosophy to begin with. Consequently, the failure which Ortner identifies in Wittgenstein is a failure identified on premises which Wittgenstein does not accept. Ortner's diagnosis of Wittgenstein is in fact an exemplification of the problem which the academic philosophical world, especially analytic philosophy, has with Wittgenstein and his conception of philosophy. Ortner's description thus gives us the possibility to phrase the challenge which Wittgenstein has left to us in even clearer terms. He presents Wittgenstein as someone who aspires at achieving by puzzle procedure, piece by piece, a coherent and consistent view of a pre-existing whole, but who fails to do so. On the other side, we have Wittgenstein, who opposes not only exactly this understanding of himself, but an understanding of philosophy along these lines as such. Thus, where Ortner sees Wittgenstein to fail according to certain standards, one can see Wittgenstein in the PI attack and question these very standards. In Wittgenstein's own understanding, it is not his writing practice and achievements or non-achievements there is something wrong with, but the standard which is used to measure them. I think Wittgenstein would claim that with the philosophical investigations he defends and promotes a view of philosophy which is at the exact opposite of what Ortner uses in order to measure his success. Wittgenstein's conception of philosophy demands procedures and strategies which differ fundamentally from possible writing and indeed proposing. While it may be correct to say of science and most academia that it is puzzle solving, philosophy, according to the PI, is, I think, nothing. And then we have, of course, the discussion. What about all those phrases where Wittgenstein says philosophical problems, or where Wittgenstein scholarship says that, according to Wittgenstein, philosophical problems are like puzzles? Sticking to Ortner's terminology, rather, philosophy, according to the philosophical investigations, may need to be syncretistic. I come now to my third part. Wittgenstein's conception of philosophy and what the example and the syncretistic may have to do with it. In that other paper, I have argued that the text genesis, text genesis of the philosophical investigations is well described as syncretistic in Ortner's sense, and that also the form of the philosophical investigations is syncretistic in this sense. It needn't be. One could say that the Tractatus has a syncretistic origin, but definitely the Tractatus, as it ended up, is not syncretistic. While I would claim that the PI is syncretistic as it ends up. I have claimed that the philosophical investigation syncretistic form is a natural consequence of the PI's conception of philosophy. In that other paper, I have further tried to answer the question what it is that connects the PI's syncretistic form with the PI's view of philosophy. In this paper here, I want to add to this answer, this time from the perspective of the role of examples in Wittgenstein's philosophizing. When discussing Wittgenstein's conception of philosophy as it manifests itself in the PI, it is standard to refer to sections from the so-called justly or unjustly so-called PI philosophy chapter, within which PI section 133 is attributed a central role. And in this section 133, Wittgenstein says, instead, we now demonstrate a method by examples, and a series of examples can be broken off. I'll just discuss the first part of this statement here. We now demonstrate the method by examples. What I find most interesting in this section is its focus on the example. The PI's conception of philosophy and philosophical method seems intimately tied up with the conception of and the use of the example. Now, Philosophical Investigation section 133 is not the only place where the role of the example is mentioned and discussed in the Philosophical Investigations, and maybe not the best either. However, here I want to take this phrase, we now demonstrate the method by examples, as the starting point of my discussion and henceforth take it to be a central aspect of Wittgenstein's mature conception of philosophy. Examples are central on two levels. First, they are central on the level of the respective object investigated or the respective subject treated in the philosophical investigations. Examples play a fundamental role in our language, our human form of life. They are central on the, as I would like to say, and we may discuss this expression, central on the ontological level. Second, examples are also central on the level of the investigation, on the level of its method and approach. These two levels, where the example exhibits its powers, shall serve as my touchstones for the remainder of this paper. I'm sorry to want to add to the systematicity two more dimensions, namely the two main senses of example as they are described by the Duden. Beispiel, first sense, beliebig herausgegriffener, typischer Einzelfall. Second sense, Vorbild, Muster. The example is present in both senses in the PI. First as the specific case, sense A, and second, sense B, the sample, the pattern for imitation, the exemplary. The PI employs a great number of examples in a sense of A, and it gives itself examples of how to do philosophy to be imitated. This is the sense B. The two senses are relevant on both levels, the ontological one and the philosophical methodological one. First, let us consider the ontological level, the example in the sense of 1A, which is the specific case. The example on the ontological level. The example is a primitive of the human form of life. How do we learn language? According to the PI, we learn it at least to a considerable extent by way of examples. Learning of grammar, guidance by meta-statements, any meta-talk will only work through accompanying training by examples. One learns the rule for how to employ a word from examples given by masters of the rule. The rule is extracted from the examples. Though regularity or recognizing regularity seems to be a prerequisite for any learning, even regularity is to be and can, according to the PI section 208, learned by example only. Thus, it is examples all the way through by which we acquire language, but also concepts and sense cues. The question, how did we learn the meaning of the word X, is a question about the examples through which we learned to use that word, PI section 77. The standard philosophical question, what is the meaning of a word, asks for a definition, but the question is, according to Wittgenstein, malfunctioning. Wittgenstein opposes it and wants to ask instead, what can the explanation of a word look like? Blue Book, page 1. This is asking for examples. Although in PI section 7, Wittgenstein also gives a sort of definition of what he means by language gain, the concept is really introduced and taught by the numerous examples of language gains that follow, and hence essentially clarified there. The same goes for the concept of game. Game is explained by examples which stand in the relation of family resemblance to each other, rather than by a definition. Why is this ontological level important? It is because it provides the basis for the statement in PI section 133, namely that we are taught a philosophical method and philosophy by example. Also, philosophy shall and can be taught through examples. And of course, then we have the question, what are we doing with all those meta-philosophical remarks in sections 89 to 133? Are they examples, or have they left that method? That's what the philosophical investigations, as I would like to see them, and as I think they are supposed to carry out the program of 133, do, teaching philosophy by examples. Examples are not an addendum, they are everything. No meta-discourse is actually needed. And I said, this poses the question about the role of the so-called philosophy chapter in the philosophical investigations. The statement, we now demonstrate the method by examples, has its justification in the fact that we, on the ontological level, always learn by example, be it learning of language, philosophy, whatever. Now, what about examples, specific cases which Wittgenstein uses when teaching his methods and philosophy? We have seen that he sees the example omnipresent in the terrain investigated. Are there also crucially important aspects of his investigation? Clearly, yes. Wittgenstein invokes in the philosophical investigations a great number of examples, specific concrete cases. In fact, he begins the philosophical investigations with a specific example, Augustine's description of how he learned language. Augustine's description is an example, albeit a negative one, and we should consider it very carefully. This example receives extensive treatment throughout the philosophical investigations in a variety of ways. According to Markuski, an early work on Wittgenstein's use of examples, Wittgenstein preferably introduces examples either at the beginning or at the end of a remark in order to check a general claim, to illustrate the point, to keep in touch with real life. Throughout the PI, the point is made that by looking at specific examples taken from real life or fictive ones, the philosophical fog of essentialism is dispersed and the family of specific cases made visible instead. For example, BI section 5. If we look at the example, I quote, if we look at the example in section 1, the shopping example, we may perhaps get an inkling how much this general notion of the meaning of a word surrounds the working of language with a haze, which makes clear vision impossible. It disperses the fog to study the phenomena of language in primitive kinds of application in which one can command a clear view of the aim and functioning of the words. Then section 23, review the multiplicity of language games in the following examples and in others, giving orders and obeying them and so on. Section 77, where he says, and this is the position you are in if you look for definitions corresponding to our concepts in aesthetics or ethics. In such a difficulty, always ask yourself, how did we learn the meaning of this word? Good, for instance, from what sort of examples? According to Husserl, I refer to his book from 2008, the primary function of the example in Wittgenstein in the PI is that of an object of comparison, to draw our attention to the characteristics of an object of investigation by making us note similarities and differences between the investigated object and the example, the object of comparison. Instead of searching for the one shared characteristic of language, language use, for example, rule governedness, Wittgenstein chooses examples as, I quote from Husserl, centers of variation for the purpose of characterizing family resemblance concepts. What has all this to do with the syncretistic? If the example is at the center of Wittgenstein's mature philosophy and thus deserves the best it can get, why should the syncretistic strategy be more apt to comply with this principle than linear discursive writing, or indeed more so than any strategy that aims at representing a whole out of its parts? It is high time that I give a somewhat more detailed characterization of the syncretistic strategy and form. I use the concept entirely as it is introduced by Ortner on the basis of Ortner's writing research, which to begin with is not particularly focused on Wittgenstein. In his books he goes through hundreds of authors, mainly from the German literature history, and describes their writing behavior. Ortner identifies 8 features of the syncretistic. I've also included them on the handout. Writing is syncretistic if it first hops all over the place. Now these are my translations of Ortner's German. They may not be adequate. Sprunghaftigkeit is Ortner's term. If it combines disparate elements both in terms of content and in terms of already existing text, Verbindung von weit auseinanderliegendem, if it is semantically open, underdetermined and underdetermining, Unterdeterminiertheit und semantische Offenheit, this is Ortner's expression. If it, 4, postpones Gestaltformation, elaboration, Aufschub der Gestaltbildung, 5, invites and offers many opportunities for creative ideas, viele Chancen für und Einladungen an den kreativen Einfall, 6, gives freedom to choose the points of departure and reference, Freiheit bei der Wahl der Standpunkte und der Gesichtspunkte, 7, is hierarchically underdetermined, hierarchische Unterbestimmtheit, 8, works side by side, works side by side with the already finished and the newly begun, which implies long text building processes and parallel options, lange Bauzeit und nebeneinander von fertiggestelltem und neu begonnenem. I speak of syncretistic in this sense. I stand entirely on Ortner's shoulders when using this concept. And in this concept, I want to say that the philosophical investigations is not only of syncretistic origin, but also of syncretistic form. Now, what is it that the use of examples comes from syncretistic writing and syncretistic form? I just check. Oh, okay. 10 minutes left. In his paper, Trying to Keep Philosophy Honest, Lars Herzberg discusses the use philosophers make of examples. In philosophy, it is standard that examples are used to either support or refute a thesis in an argument. But there is also another use, and this use is, so Herzberg, characteristic of Wittgenstein. I quote, "There is another way of using examples in which reflecting on cases becomes part of the work of clarification itself. This happens when we do not know where we are going, or when we think we know, but the examples take us by surprise. I would suggest being open to this possibility is tremendously important in philosophy, since it is what enables us to make new discoveries. It is very hard to, since it means being prepared to relinquish our control over where the line of thought is taking us." Now, according to Herzberg, it is for Wittgenstein crucial that one in philosophy resists the temptation to want to come up with theses, and therefore he uses example. He exemplifies that use of examples. I won't, for the sake of time, quote more from Herzberg and just go on. So according to Herzberg, examples are a way to slow down, to resist the tendency to follow one line of thought, to head for the thesis. Employing the method of examples with his students, Herzberg observes that having to look for examples, these students feel that it slows them down, does not let them get where they want to go, or only gets them there by a detour. Naturally, taking detours or being slowed down should not be regarded the task in itself, but paying attention to and giving tribute to the concrete example as a focal point of factual or fictive reality will slow down, and it may even force to note that things are different than one thought. Herzberg thinks that the procedure by example is paradigmatic of literature, but that it also characterizes Wittgenstein's mature philosophy. Giving room to the example with all its facets may have as a consequence that one wants to deviate from linearity and obedience to an ideal of strict Gestaltbildung. It may yield the syncretistic. At the same time, it is the syncretistic form which can give the example the room and freedom it requires. As some of you know, it is one of my favorite Wittgenstein subjects to study the transition from the round book to the philosophical investigations. In BI section 133, Wittgenstein says that he teaches his philosophical method or his philosophy by examples. Teaching philosophy by examples, that's then what is or shall be undertaken in a philosophical investigation. But wasn't the earlier Brown book, much more than the philosophical investigations, a master display, a firework of examples in philosophy? Moreover, weren't there more examples, or more examples only in the Brown book? Why did Wittgenstein change from the Brown book to the philosophical investigations? What was wrong with the Brown book? The answer which I'd like to suggest is the following. The examples of the Brown book as such were fine, but not the form of the Brown book. The examples needed syncretistic rather than linear form. The Brown book aspired after a linear form. And on the handout, I have included one phrase by Ortner where he says, in the end, the syncretistic is opposed to linear discursive procedure. According to Ortner, a key feature of syncretistic writing is that it is opposed to linear discursive writing. Now, this contrast between the linear and the syncretistic is discussed in other terms by Wittgenstein in his preface, where he says that at one point he wanted to proceed in a lückenlose Folge, in a linear sequence, but later he saw this is not only something which he can't bring together with his writing nature, but it's also not adequate in terms of the nature of the philosophical subject investigated. That demands a crisscross procedure, not a linear lückenlose, without breaks procedure. The Brown book was the attempt at the first, and the philosophical investigations at the second, at the syncretistic crisscross form. And I do think in the Brown Book, Wittgenstein had tried to do philosophy as he had programmatically declared in the big typescript, where he's in the big typescript in the so-called philosophy chapter there, he says, we have to do philosophy step by step, piece by piece, methodologically, one after the other. I have a quote here. But this is not the view which I think he has tried to put to practice in the philosophical investigations. And at this point then, the second sense of example, the Vorbild, makes its strong entrance. And the discourse about Wittgenstein's writing and the discourse about the role of the example in Wittgenstein's philosophy merge. From the perspective of the philosophical investigations, the Brown Book gave a wrong example of how to do philosophy, a wrong example in the sense of be, a wrong exemplar, a wrong sample for imitation. Not its many, in fact, very many examples of language gains or primitive uses of language were wrong, but its overall procedure and approach. The Brown Book demonstrated and taught philosophy as much as possible, linear rather than syncretistic crisscross activity. It is appreciated by many for exactly that, but clearly not by the Wittgenstein of the philosophical investigations. So, summarizing, why is the syncretistic form required to give the example its adequate place in philosophy? Language is, according to the philosophical investigations, characterized by an impressive multiplicity, creativity, context dependency, practice embeddedness, a multiplicity of viewpoints. Language is, according to the PI, itself deeply syncretistic. Now, you may ask me, you actually ascribe to Wittgenstein's certain thesis about the nature of language. We can discuss this. Philosophical problems of language and philosophical problems in general are deeply syncretistic. It seems to be Wittgenstein's idea that you cannot treat the syncretistic by a method which is not itself syncretistic. The investigation shall mirror and map the investigated. Therefore, philosophical problems cannot be dealt with in linear ways, but require an iterative and crisscross procedure, as the PI preface says. TPI's philosophy thus needs to oppose the view that linear procedure could be an overall remedy. Philosophy can, in the end, not be done and taught in other ways than through a crisscross procedure. This is a claim which we should accept as something which the author of the PI firmly believed, independent of whether we accept it as such and agree with Wittgenstein on this or not. In fact, very few of us would agree. My main idea about the relation between the example and the syncretistic is thus in fact very simple. Syncretistic strategy and syncretistic form are required to provide the example with the space it needs to unfold in order to protect its place as a concrete and multifaceted example of real language use and life, as a focal point of what we deal with. We can also say as an object of comparison. Syncretistic strategy and syncretistic form are also required to mirror and map the terrain investigated in adequately responsive ways. Consequently, the PI is to give an example in the sense of the pattern to imitate of syncretistic crisscross rather than of linear philosophy. Now, even though syncretistic strategy and form alone may, of course, not be sufficient to make philosophy successful, which means to make the philosophical problems disappear, it's the syncretistic strategy and form still seem, according to the philosophical investigations, minimal requirements, necessary elements. Can I still go on for 2 minutes? Yeah?
2.5 minutes.
Okay. So, fourth section. What has this to do with analytic philosophy? Well, it has with analytic philosophy in very shortly speaking to do in that sense that analytic philosophy seems opposed to both that form of doing philosophical writing as also that conception of philosophy. And that's why the fourth section is headed, the spirit of this civilization is a spirit that is alien and uncongenial to the author. Now, I have presented a Wittgenstein who, at least as the author of the PI, deliberately chooses a syncretistic form in order to give space to a view of philosophy where the dynamics and multiplicity of language, including the multiplicity of practiced viewpoints, are properly mirrored and receive the place they deserve. Rather than theses and definitions, the concrete example is the focus of the Wittgensteinian investigation. In order to let the example unfold its powers, the form of the philosophical work is to be crisscross, syncretistic, rather than linear, accumulative. Ordner presents Wittgenstein as someone who failed on the second, while I presented Wittgenstein as someone who promotes and defends an alternative to the second by settling in his philosophical investigations on the first. But Ordner's approach is in no way exceptional or different from what one should expect in our academic domain. In fact, it is typical and representative, not only for our understanding of science and scholarship in general, but equally of the standard approach to Wittgenstein. So, if someone is in the minority, it is not Ordner, but the Wittgenstein whom I have presented. Ordner is giving apt expression to a view of knowledge and the correct method of knowledge acquisition which is standard in academia. Philosophical problems and philosophical knowledge are treated as similar to scientific problems and scientific knowledge. Clearly, Wittgenstein has opposed this view early in his career. In his drafts for a preface from November 1930, published in Culture and Value and partially published as the preface to the so-called Philosophische Bemerkungen, he writes, quote, "It is all one to me what the typical Western scientist understands or appreciates my work, since in any case he does not understand the spirit in which I write," end of quote. According to Wittgenstein, the typical Western scientist is after progress, after erecting stone for stone, a steadfast building, puzzle work, while he, Wittgenstein, is after making the foundations for any possible building transparent. As he later says in the PI, his investigations are not, quote, directed towards phenomena, but as one might say, towards the possibilities of phenomena, end of quote. Also CPI section 125. The aim of philosophy is not to resolve contradictions by means of a discovery, but to make it possible for us to get a clear view of the states of affairs that trouble us before the contradictions are resolved. A further quote from those early preface drafts from 1930. "I'm aiming at something different than are the scientists, and my thoughts move differently than do theirs. Each sentence that I write is trying to say the whole thing, that is, the same thing over and over again, and it is as though they were views of one object seen from different angles. If a bad form of progress is the form of the thought which Wittgenstein opposes, then the book about which he speaks in these preface drafts must have a form which in an important sense opposes that bad form of progress. If the bad form of progress is linked to linear discursiveness, then his book can't be linear discursive." So the book which he actually then managed to put this problem to practice is the Philosophical Investigations. I think that in these early preface drafts, Wittgenstein, and this has earlier been said by Georg Hendrik von Wright, very directly alludes to Carnap's preface to the Logische Aufbau der Welt. Because Carnap says, what we're doing is building stone by stone a canvas to a whole. But indeed, the spirit of our academia and philosophy, and also the spirit of standard Wittgenstein interpretation, seems to me closer to the spirit of Carnap than the Wittgenstein spirit as it finds expression in these early preface drafts. This is no criticism, just a statement of the fact that, so it seems to me, Wittgenstein is not integrated into our philosophical methods and approaches, because the form of his philosophical investigations is not integrated, and it's not integrated into my paper here either. This is Carnap's spirit in which I have structured and presented this paper. Philosophy is mostly done in the jigsaw puzzle science rather than the crisscross syncretistic way. Why is this so? Surely many of us have an ideal different from Wittgenstein's. Carnap quite definitely had. But even if he wanted to do philosophy in Wittgenstein's spirit, we may still not be able to. This is because we may not really know how to do it. It may not be easy to do crisscross syncretistic philosophy in Wittgenstein's spirit. I mean, on, it may be, it seems that syncretistic writing and forming seems to be an easy thing. It's maybe not too difficult to come up with writing that follows these features, but the question is, isn't the philosophical investigations, even if it is syncretistic, more than that? And I struggle with finding out what is this more. It's not in the spirit of Carnap what is this more, but there is something more, and that's the difficult part. Wittgenstein's philosophical investigations is not an arbitrary conglomerate, not an anything goes collection of reminders of, or aphorisms. It's an album, he says, but a good album has not no form, but a very specific form. I don't feel I have recognized and really understood Wittgenstein's principles for composing his BI, for putting together the remarks in the way he did. I can't say why he picked that remark and not that other remark over there, why he put the remarks in that sequence and not that other sequence. I can't see the philosophical investigations gestalt except on the very general level that it follows syncretistic principles. I think I should probably just stop here and conclude with just pointing to, again, to the preface of the investigations where he, in a pessimistic way, expresses that he is doubtful about the success of his work, whether we really would manage to recognize the methods in the examples and manage to apply them on our own. But one thing seems to me clear, that what he wanted to do and wanted to show is very much in opposition to what is our standard academic, is the standard academic way of doing philosophy. Thank you.